Chapter 10, My Boring House. Yeah, I learned how to be boring. My girlfriend left me in the summer of 2017. I actually did cry at the time. I knew I wanted her gone. I wasn't crying to her. I was just used to the stress of dealing with her. You know, like, as I said before, when you're in the thick of it, you just get on with it. The stress that I generally felt at that point in my life, you know, I was suddenly free. Like, I just suddenly had peace and I just released myself. I'd suddenly become fully free. Free to be alone, free to think, free to be me. I just cried. I usually bottled up all the stress. But, you know, she was just really stressful to deal with, and I was myself a little bit of a mess at that time. But I now had the freedom to cry. It also triggered me to remember my loneliness that I'd felt when I first came out. Like when I believed that my existence, when I first moved into the previous bungalow that we're in, I never thought that I'd be able to become, you know, me. I was actually depressed. Like, I was actually in proper despair because I was in, like, guy mode and everything. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is the time when I actually tried to commit suicide. So, like, I went from that to meeting girlfriends, and then I'm sitting here alone in a big house. And I could have snapped back because I was immediately triggered by that memory. That's why I was crying. I calmed down. Like, you know, it was weird. I was a year into my transition at this point, and I was becoming beautiful. Like, this too was something that I could finally appreciate in peace. I cried. It was awesome. I cried all night. I cried and cried and occasionally laughed. I was free. Free to cry. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't even cry in bed. I dropped to the floor whenever I felt like it, just to cry. I get up after I stopped. After I stopped crying, I'd get up, you know, after, like, just contemplating about whatever for a while. This was my new freedom. I thought it was her at first, you know, but I analysed my thoughts the next morning. I hadn't actually thought about her at all. I was releasing all of my stress all at once, as I said, because, like, I'd been suppressing a lot of stress. I'd been dealing with all of the stress from the aftermath of my early transition, especially the GNU drama. Then I suddenly met girlfriend. It was an absolute fucking nightmare. You know, I just had to push it all aside for a while. So the next day, I went to a restaurant, like, next day after we broke up. You know, next day, I went to a restaurant alone for late breakfast. It was a local Wimpy bar. It used to be quite popular in the UK. It's basically just, like, fried food. I used to enjoy going there when I was a kid, so I fancied some that day. You know, I wasn't used to being alone, so being around lots of strangers in a restaurant also made me feel a little bit triggered. It triggered me because the last time I did this, like, the last time I went to a restaurant alone like that was, again, when I was in guy mode. I was triggered into, like, that feeling from, you know, when I first came out because I was a mess back then. During those, like, yeah, I mean, I was fine, you know, I ate my food. I went into a coffee shop next door to have a latte because did I do that in the Wimpy? After my latte, I just happened to notice a Labour Party stall outside. They just happened to be doing one that day. I'd been a member since 2015 of the Labour Party at that point, and I just went there on a whim. Like, I was a member, so I just thought I'd help out. I didn't do any, like, physical activism before then. I'd already, like, you know, thought of it, but they were there. I don't really remember much else from that day. I'd lost all my friends because, like, you know, all of the friends I had were the ones that girlfriend made. She'd left me and she started bad-mouthing me, saying I was abusive, this, or whatever, like, cunt. So, you know, they all ghosted me, so I had no one. The Labour Party were my friends now, and I would often engage with them. Like, they became my friends. My relationship with the Labour Party activists, they were mostly, like, just, you know, purely productive. Never chaotic or dramatic at all, because, like, we weren't really friends, like, but I went to meetings, you know, we just talked. I got on with everyone, you know. I even ran as a candidate in the May 2018 local council elections. I came second place. Back to 2017, though, of course, I didn't really regard any of those, those Labour people that I met, they weren't really friends, as I said, they were just, like, you know, colleagues. None of them would ever, like, be there for me in the absolute worst of it. I knew this. and I knew I needed to make some changes in my life. I spent a good solid few weeks that month just analyzing everything from my life until this point. Being alone gave me time to think, just countless quiet nights. I started writing a journal and I noticed a pattern. The journal was actually somewhat of a precursor to this book, although obviously I was much younger and less experienced back then. I hadn't really seen the world as much. There was a reason why I'd been alienating so many people over the years. It wasn't because they were all bad. I just didn't control myself properly. I'd known for years what sort of person I was. You know, I knew, but it all came to a head and I basically decided to calm myself down. I needed to be much more personable and much more friendly, you know, tempering some of my worst personality traits, because I was a nutter back then. I'd just go completely insane at people all the time about even the most trivial of things. I didn't stop drinking. I did limit it to mostly weekends, and even then, I'm only on like evenings. Or I'd occasionally like get drunk once or twice a week, but never two bottles of wine. Usually never. Always one, or even less than that. Sometimes to treat myself and, you know, just watch films after a long, hard week. Just knock myself out for the night. Yes, alcoholism. I didn't really become more productive in my work, because I was already productive in work. But I did tidy my house. I threw out a lot of old junk, and I made my house incredibly boring. I repurposed ex-girlfriend's games room as my own, setting up my own computer in there, and I had my mum come round one day to fetch ex-girlfriend's stuff because she'd left it there. You know, she boxed it all up. I did have some fun with it that day because, like, my mum was, like, outside. And I resented the fact that my mum had essentially started treating my ex-girlfriend as her second daughter, nursing her, giving her all the support she wanted. You know, like, she apparently felt sorry for her. Never mind me, her actual daughter, the support that she was actually supposed to be giving me. I was left to fend for myself, and the fact that I did not need emotional support was irrelevant, and I knew I didn't. I was aware of the fact that none was offered, though, and so it was the principle of the matter. She blamed me for causing all of the chaos, lecturing me on a daily basis. Even though I was not the one to break off the relationship, I was prepared, against gritted teeth, to keep my girlfriend until the day she broke up with me. You know, I was made out to be the villain, so I owned it. I thought, all right, if everyone hates me, that's fine. I had been quite offended on the day my ex-girlfriend broke up with me because of how she did it. I climbed out of bed and began my day, and she just stood over me while I was working. She broke it to me gently, like she was trying not to hurt my feelings. But, you know, it was so obviously false. She wanted to stay at my house and, you know, keep living with me as a quote-unquote friend. That's why she was being gentle. You know, because, like, she had nowhere else to go. She was like the way she looked at me was it made me furious at the time. I held my tongue, but like she looked down at me like I was a piece of shit. All I did was make myself happy. You know, I'd just been with Catherine for like 2 weeks because she wasn't doing anything for me. She was a pain in the ass and she just stressed me out. So, you know, her face and tone when she broke up with me was more like, haha, I don't answer to you now. Oh, yeah, we'll see about that. She offered me continued friendship. She was talking down to me like I was stupid, trying to get me to... Ugh. She had to go. So I forced her to actually, you know, leave. I made it clear to her that day that she would not be allowed to stay. Like, get the fuck out of my house, is what I was thinking. Just get out. I made sure to get the keys from her so she couldn't actually... so that she could not enter my house again. I just wanted her gone. Like, I told her myself... I told myself then that I should have got rid of her like months ago. But my mum came that day wanting to collect my ex-girlfriend's stuff. I refused to answer the door for several hours. I just did my work quietly. My mum wasn't even sure if I was actually in, but she'd continue shouting my name, telling me how completely unreasonable I was being and how, you know, she and the ex was outside the whole time. I had every intention of giving all her stuff back, but, you know, I was just being an arsehole for fun. My mum started lecturing me when she came in, saying how I needed to get it right with her. What? I wanted to scream bloody murder then and there, but I held my tongue. Betrayed, I thought, but then it hit me. I do need to make it right. For me. I vowed then that I would never let anyone hijack my life again. Not like that. Nor, especially not hijack my mind. as she did. Part of my weakness was my short temper at that time. So I thought, well, what if I'm not angry all of the time? I didn't do it for them. I wanted more control over myself. So, you know, so I'd be able to handle other people more effectively. It really isn't rocket science. I just kept doing my life, you know, like a little bit more restraint though. Like if I was really angry about something or happy in a conversation, like I wouldn't suppress it, but like I made sure that I was like aware of my thoughts at all times. And if I was like really angry and I just wanted to burst, I'd acknowledge what I wanted to say while not actually saying it. My voice would remain calm, even if you deserved my wrath, and you did deserve my wrath at all times, because like, everyone was just being an asshole. I thought that's how my lizard brain felt, but again, I just faked it. But the lack of additional drama served another purpose. Having an anger is one thing, but expressing it makes you worse, and then the anger becomes its own, like, you know, vicious circle. I stopped expressing anger. I would force myself to behave logically at all times, even when I was just completely losing it inside. It's very difficult, but I learned. Over time, I would experience a genuine lack of anger. I just think verbally and intentionally what the best response is in each situation and do that or say that. This started to become natural to the extent that I became invincible at a psychological level. This was not just in real life. It was on the internet as well. Like, I became much more professional and just friendly with everyone. I even engaged with several commercial entities that wanted to sample some of my work, and you know, actually reached out to them myself. I learned at this time that I didn't need to use my anger, even when I had it, which meant that I also experienced reduced anger, because again, anger is a vicious circle. I found that I'd become more easily able to control other people as well, but I also chose not to do that. I made friends instead. When I'm calm, I experience the world as mostly flat. I once described it to a friend like hearing the music and hearing every tone. Most people become distracted by the movement of the song and they don't truly hear it. I hear every part of it. I hear the nuance. I hear just without bias. I also happen to have a pitch perfect memory. Decluttering my house meant I had no distractions other than my own perfect mind. I also happen to possess a highly musical mind, but that's irrelevant. I only gave that as an example. I began taking much better care of my health. Cutting down on drinking was just the start. I initially decided that I would also cut out meat, which would also enable me to lose weight more easily as I had surgery in a year. This was really easy, but I noticed that after like a week or two, that I went shopping one day and my shopping basket was like mostly vegan. The only non-vegan item was cheese, which made me smile at the supermarket, so I put it back. I went home vegan that day. I did initially start, though, like before that, with a pescatarian diet, because fish is healthier than regular meat, but I was cooking sardines one day, and I became really ill, like, from just the smell of a bad fish. The stench was unbelievable, so you know, I just went off meat entirely. I began exercising daily. I already had an exercise bike at home, but my ex-girlfriend was the one who mostly used it. I kept it, and I started using it myself. I went swimming a lot, and regular Labour Party activism meant that I also rode my bike a lot, because like, we rode around a lot, especially like doing leaflets and stuff. And also because their meetings were on like the other side of town. And the town I was living in was had quite a lot of steep hills, so yeah, that was a trek. Part of my exercise routine was also food shopping. I didn't like the supermarkets in my town anyway. I'd moved to a town near my hometown, and it was boring. You know, my old bungalow was much nicer. I missed my hometown, so I just shopped there regularly. Like, because there was nothing in the town I was living in. Like, it was just mostly yuppies. Not even yuppies. They just pretended like they were better than everyone else. But that town was shit. I only used my bike when I needed to go somewhere special or didn't have time. I otherwise walked everywhere. Walking was my alone time. It was basically meditation, where you know I just think about whatever I wanted. My preferred supermarket was in my hometown, so I walked there. This again was part of my exercise routine. It took about 2 hours to walk there. Walking back meant carrying lots of heavy shopping, which also trained upper body strength. All quite logical, and vegan food doesn't really spoil for short periods in the summer heat, so you know it's mostly just vegetables and fruit. Where possible, I would also occasionally visit my mother. As part of my shopping routine, I became much more friendly with my mum after my ex-girlfriend finally moved out. Yeah, because my girlfriend was so fucking useless that she actually lived with my mum for a while, and she didn't tell me this until after about a month. She finally found her a place of her own, and she moved out. So my girlfriend was like living on her own after about a month, and you know, had a job and everything. Completely vindicating all of my struggles, but when I went that I went through, because like you know, she was so fucking useless. But yeah, she was capable. She was just fucking lazy. Anyway, I cut out all sugar from my diet, even in coffee. I'd occasionally indulge, but you know, being vegan meant even sweets were mostly unavailable. So you know, because most of them contain gelatin, for example. No milk as well. I did try making nut milk. I tried making almond milk at one point, but it just seemed pointless. Black coffee's fine. I also cut down on coffee consumption. The fact that I'd given up smoking at that time, at least for that time, meant I didn't need as much coffee, because nicotine reduces the effects of caffeine in the blood. Like when you quit, you literally have to like halve your caffeine intake. My diet was just naturally low in sugar. Like vegan diets are just really good if you want to lose weight. I liked my new bliss. I was actually genuinely in bliss. I found the blog of someone at that time who was like me. The blog sadly no longer online as I record this, but I also have a book, not exactly self-help. Fuck no. It was great. I even spoke to her on IFC. She spoke to me on her blog about, she wrote on her blog about constant boredom, self-destructive behavior. I won't bore you. Basically, she was just like me. Like her life was quite similar to what you've read so far in this book. I found it by accident. I was just searching on a whim for people like me, you know, because there's a certain word that describes me. At that time, the results that I got on Google were usually shit. I especially enjoyed an article that she'd written called Centerline. And I wish I could find it on the Wayback Machine. I'll summarize it for this chapter. It's basically like, the article was basically saying, like, if you're on a highway, you stay in your lane, right? And if you just switch lanes on a highway, you know, recklessly, you're going to get smashed into. And her brain was like that, because, like, she didn't have any guardrails. And that was like me as well, you know, like, she just crashed. So you had to, like, use discipline to stay in your lane. And that's basically what I was doing. You know, it really resonated with me. Like, she was exactly like me. As I said, you know, I have one of her books. She will be mentioned in a later chapter. I did get drunk on some evenings. I didn't stop drinking. And sometimes very drunk on some evenings, and I would rant on ILC, but I intentionally made sure most of the time that I wasn't on my computer. I even turned it off. Because, like, when I was drunk, I couldn't even type my encryption passphrase, so I was, like, you know, safe. I normally just wrote, I had a journal, as I said. I watched videos on my phone as well. Like when I was drunk, you know, I'd watch a video on my phone instead, because I didn't have, like, ILC or chat rooms or anything on my phone, so, you know, I was safe. I kept a journal daily, and I said earlier in this book that I dislike therapy, and this is not based on ignorance. I'd actually seen how much of a waste of time it is, because I previously tried psychotherapy myself. It didn't work on me. The therapist would always annoy me. I felt like she was talking down to me. I did briefly try cognitive behavioral therapy, even more useless. CBT is basically just like, okay, yeah, exercise, go out and meet people, you know, try and calm the fuck down. Literally what I was doing. Anyway, so, I mean, therapy for a lot of people is just, like, especially me, is just such a fraudulent concept. I just fixed myself, you know, all I needed to do was sort my life out and actually help myself. I'm not, like, you know, trying to disrespect psychiatry, though, because, you know, like, some people actually find it useful, but if you're depressed or anxious, for example, you know, antidepressants help, and I've been on antidepressants myself at some point. You know, if you're, like, schizophrenic, antipsychotic drugs help, whatever, you know, like, A lot of psychotherapy is, like, fraudulent, though. Like, they're just, like, you know, scamming the world. Like, I have no respect for the profession as a whole. The problem was this. I didn't process thoughts verbally. Like, for a while, I was intentionally keeping conscious watch on my thoughts all the time. If I felt that there was silence, I would intentionally verbalize my thoughts or feelings. I know this sounds strange to most people, but I've never naturally thought on a verbal level. I just tend to be calm. I can think verbally, but I don't do it automatically. I don't think in language. It's just too inefficient. But it helped in this case because it meant that I could actually write down what I was feeling, what I was thinking. You know, I was therapizing myself, basically. I wrote in a journal daily, as I said, literally just what I was thinking that day, or even in that moment, and what I'd done that day. I became genuinely happy and just calm. And I wasn't a robot. Far from it. You know, like, my thoughts became much more intense during this period because I not only controlled myself, I could hear myself. I was ruthless with myself. I was manipulating myself. I used logic to become a good person. Next came my house. I didn't actually have many personal items even then. I had my business items, but nothing really personal. Like, I've never been like an overly like materialistic person. I alluded to this in my previous chapter, for example, called Because I Love Shopping. Basically taking the piss because I was just buying all the shit I needed cheap, and that was it. I did have a lot of clutter, though, especially stuff that my girlfriend had left behind. I intentionally made my house as plain as possible. I already never watched TV anyway, and you know, because I just had my laptop, but I'd started eliminating all redundant things from my life. My house already had plain white walls. There was a hardwood flooring downstairs, cream carpet upstairs. The house was relatively modernized to a standard from roughly the late 2000s. The kitchen and bathroom were styled accordingly. It had a conservatory, large living room, large kitchen, large garden, front and back. In the living room, there was a small desk with my laptop and a second monitor. There were several shelves and with my company stock for shipping. There was also a sofa at the end of the living room. There were red curtains in the living room. They were always drawn. The kitchen was relatively plain, undecorated, and I had no snacks most of the time, just vegetables, nuts, legumes, vegan shit. A conservatory was connected to the kitchen. It only contains my exercise bike. It had a tiny rack to hang my clothes on, like to dry them. There was also a clothes hook outside, but I never really used it. The upstairs, with cream carpet on the landing, had a very respectable toilet and shower. There was one large bedroom and two small bedrooms. The large bedroom contained only my bed and some drawers containing notepads plus pens. My clothes and a mirror were also in there. A small game room, previously used by my ex-girlfriend, contained another small desk that I'd set up with my own computer on it, but I rarely used it. The third small bedroom contained various servers that hosted my software projects, and another desk that I would sometimes write from. That was like my quiet room, basically. My house was not merely decluttered from a visual perspective, but from an electrical perspective and an energy perspective as well. I mainly steamed all of my food, which used very little energy. I stored hot drinks in thermal flasks to avoid excess heating usage, just, you know, like for kettles and so on. Ditto food. I kept a food flask as well during the day. I kept the thermostat down during winter to about 18 degrees Celsius. I reconfigured all of my computers, especially servers, so that I had fewer electrical outlets in use. And I just used as little energy as possible. I often turned computers off when I didn't need them. I avoided plastic or even paper packaging when shopping. I mostly only bought food. I'd only buy food items loose when possible because I was mostly just buying fruit and veg and nuts and stuff. This, combined with a generally efficient lifestyle, meant that I produced very little waste. I reused packaging, for example, when shipping computers. I regularly went through entire fortnights where I would not even fill a quarter of a bag for, you know, rubbish. And I barely even touched a pink recycling bag either. I threw out maybe like 10 bags in the space of 12 months, most of it recycled. In short, I had established an extremely minimalist lifestyle. Most people would not be able to tolerate it. I actually started to becoming annoyed when I noticed how wasteful literally everyone else was. I wouldn't even eat out. You know, when I went anywhere, I'd take a warm veggie soup with me in my food flask. I'd even eat it during outings with my local Labour Party. Like, I did treat myself like literally just once or twice. Like when we went to restaurants like with my Labour Party, you know, because it was just like social protocol. I wasn't going to take a flask of veggie soup into a restaurant with me. I never invited guests, but my mum would occasionally visit. My mum even commented herself about how boring my house was. It was about as minimalist as you could possibly get. I did have a lot of lab gear, but that was it. You know, soldering equipment, for example. When you did visit, you knew how different my house was. I'd made a place that was mine to reflect my personality. Despite the chaos inside, this was how I'd always imagined a house, functional. I'd made everything efficient and really frugal, despite having copious space. I'd often admired people who lived in small apartments, like in Tokyo, where space had to be used efficiently. To my mind, entering my house was like entering another planet. This is actually how I thought at the time. The outside world being what it was, my house was a place where I could just be me. I'd often enjoy just sitting in silence for hours, thinking to myself. I was my own private paradise, and you needed a visa to enter my little world. Catherine found it adorable. I showed her quite a lot of photos of it. My own house was the exact her house was the exact opposite of mine. She had loads of like frivolous shit everywhere. I did admire her home in that we did otherwise have the same utilitarian mindset. Like she had Ethernet cables running throughout her house, like for all the servers and everything. She ran a lot of tech there. We used to compare each other's tech setups. Like her computer setups were much more over-engineered than mine. Like, we, you know, a lot of big machines, and it was all just a bit of a mess. I did enjoy watching Sailor Moon and stuff with her, though, like on a Raspberry Pi hooked up to a TV in her living room whenever I went to see her. As I said, we kept seeing each other non-sexually, even after we, like, broke up. Like, her Raspberry Pi ran Kodi, like a media center, which was like a media center thing. My own home networking setup was extremely minimalist by comparison. She'd have like, you know, big servers and everything all like were encrypted and everything. I just had like literally a ThinkPad with a card bus Ethernet adapter in it and like a USB hub powering a bunch of like small devices. And that was it, you know, just an Ethernet switch, one or two Ethernet runs and then another switch upstairs and, you know, one or two like tiny little like low power servers. I did enjoy, it sounds really stupid, but I basically saw like Catherine's house and mine as like a perfect mirror, because like she was like everything she did was like just wacky and over engineered, and mine was just clean, right? We both ran our own websites, mail servers, and other things, like even like custom Linux routers at home, but mine was literally just like almost nothing. You wouldn't even think that I was running a data center in my house. It was that clean. You know, everything in my house was just, you know, multi-purpose and just neat. This was the contrast. Her chaos versus my control. I liked visiting her for this and other reasons, like just as a general contrast. We were the exact opposite in terms of preference. We had the same mind, but our lives could not be any more different. One of my brothers said it another way. He said that I'd become a boring hippie vegan thing. I brought my suit with me once to my mum's house while he was there, and he told me he wasn't interested in trying my boring, tasteless soup. It was actually quite nice. My mum visited once. We listened to The Cure, which was one of her favourite bands. She felt safer with me at that point for some reason, as she started telling me about her childhood, and she never told me before. You know, I was much more calm and relaxed. She noticed how calm. She actually noticed how calm I was becoming. She mentioned it. She literally said it. I liked the Vulcans from Star Trek Enterprise, and I made myself like them. Basically, that's actually how I thought at the time. I enjoyed watching her become depressed because I had because I didn't have any snacks. She'd raided each cupboard, disappointed each time, and expecting the next one to be any different in my plain, unassuming, and neatly organized kitchen. She was hungry. I only had vegetables, nuts, lentils, and other things. I offered her yesterday's lentil soup, but she wasn't really interested. I ended up making her like a pasta dish or something. I felt like Michael from The Good Place opening a new frozen yogurt bar. She literally said it's like being in hell, being in my house. Because like, I don't even remember why, but she was like staying over that night. Vulcans do have pointy ears, you know. My mum told me she didn't know how I or anyone could tolerate living in a house like mine. She told me many times that it was really, really boring, like that it actually depressed her, which was the point. She would actually annoy me sometimes by buying things for me and suggesting that I put up lots of decorations and things. I liked my boring house. My house was boring for a reason. I liked my boring house. I made it that way intentionally. It was by design. She didn't understand that. I'd watch my mother, my mum, like she can't, like we were just relaxing that night though. Like, you know, we listened to some music. I think we also listened to She Sells Sanctuary by The Cult. I think they're called The Cult. I watched my mum calmly as she fell, as she slowly fell asleep on my couch. I'd given her a blanket for the night and I continued my work for the evening. I just quietly went to my own bed after a few hours. I made her breakfast in the morning and she sat on her phone quietly for a few hours. We didn't really talk. Then she just went home. I relayed all of this to Catfriend afterwards, who found it extremely amusing. I was like, I wasn't even like, actually torturing anyone. This is just my house, you know, it's just the way I wanted it. I also made my house, I just made my house incredibly boring. I didn't even have a TV. I did find it funny once because I intentionally bought yogurt for my mum. Like, she wanted me to buy yogurt. So I intentionally bought the one she didn't like, peach flavor. And then I ate it all myself after she said she didn't want it. Yeah. I was in my mid-20s and I was extremely petty. The months went by peacefully and I just calmly focused on my life. You know, as I said, I exercised a lot more. I had strict exercise routine. I did like 2 or 3 hours of cycling before breakfast every day. I swam a few times a week as well. Used the exercise bike in the evenings. You know, I'd walk around a lot as well. Plus moving around in my lab all day, you know, lugging laptops around and shit and stuff with that. That's also somewhat of an exercise in itself. I weighed 130 kilograms at roughly 170 centimeters tall. In July 2017, I lost 50 kilograms in a year. I was 80 kilos in July 2018. One day, I was calmly food shopping, and my ex-girlfriends, with her new girlfriends, ambushed me at a supermarket. Well, that's how it felt at the time. They were engaging me in pleasant conversation. What a nightmare! Her girlfriend was literally looking at my shopping basket and judging my choices, commenting on them. Noting the type of vinegar that I'd purchased. I'd apparently bought the wrong type of vinegar for the chickpea salad that I was planning to make that night. Her new girlfriend annoyed me because I couldn't read her very well. She was highly intelligent, but she'd not expressed her emotions much. I previously met her at the trans group that we were in the previous year. She was probably on the autistic spectrum. She took part in conversations at the trans group, like girlfriend and I were, you know, girlfriends. She'd occasionally offer, you know, little tidbits of wisdom, but she was mostly quiet. I knew when I met her that she'd be trouble, you know, because she was highly passionate politically, mostly left-wing, and intelligent and vegan, and she was just, like, judgmental all the time. It felt like she was judging you all the time. She's usually quiet as well. As I said, I liked her mum a lot more. Because she actually spoke to you. I spoke to her all the time. So did my mum. I watched them both in their car after I left the supermarket as I unlocked my bike. She'd actually touched my basket. She'd actually touched the vinegar that I had purchased without asking. And I chose to remember this fact. For now, though, my Vulcan philosophy would prevent further action. I took great pride in cooking, even taking photographs of meals that I'd cooked, taking notes of recipes, tweaking them. Until I got everything right. Suddenly thrusting myself into veganism without a plan meant that I needed to learn cooking skills really quickly, and I did. I mostly cook stews and soups because these could be done in bulk and therefore save a lot of energy plus time. I once attended a Labour Party meeting consisting of multiple Labour Party constituency groups. I didn't actually announce that it was me, and I'm sure health and safety law would not allow it, but I decided on a whim one day that I'd just make lots of falafel and hummus sandwiches for the event. And I left them out discreetly at the meeting, next to all of the other food that the professional caterers had left out. Vegan food terrorism, I thought. I did it for fun. During the event, there was a drag queen event and also a quiz night. One of the presenters on announced on the stage mic, he said, whoever made the falafel and hummus sandwiches, thank you, they were delicious. I beat the caterers. I was too busy that night, though, drinking the free gin graciously donated by a colleague, and I did get drunk. Not enough to make a complete asshole of myself. I mean, I knew my limits. My colleagues could probably see how much gin I was obsessively drinking, though. It was a very fun night. It was a very boring night, actually, because, like, it was a quiz night, which I hate, and why do I want to be around a drag queen? Or like, I already know millions of like people. Whatever. Anyway, I don't even know why I was there. That's why I got drunk. I forgot. I don't even remember most of the night. The only social contacts I had was with the Labour Party and briefly Catfriend. Catfriend and I mean, I had a few, like, you know, people online that I knew as well. Like, Catfriend and I, as I said, you know, we broke up after a while. We stopped seeing each other as much, though we did occasionally still meet as, you know, just regular friends. We'd chat online. My Labour Party colleagues were, you know, they were mostly sufficient human contacts. That and the other people who worked the tills at various shops, like, who I'd get to know. I often just went shopping just to, you know, talk, because some of the people who worked in some of the shops that I just really liked never asked for the name or, you know, I never spoke to them outside the shop. I just, like, talked to people like that. I never felt the need for, like, deep interpersonal contacts. Just being around other people was enough. Even if I wasn't talking to them, I'm still human, and humans go insane when they're alone for too long. So, you know, I knew this, and that's why I did it. You know, I just went out and made sure I had the minimum amount of contact that I needed. Most of my contacts with people was then mostly work-oriented. As I said, you know, I enjoyed working political campaigns with the Labour Party. I'd also visit some of my colleagues' houses just to, you know, socialise. I actually did go to their social events. I often avoided them as well. I never willingly entered a pub. What's the point in going to a pub? I thought, you know, I could just get drunk at home. I became the LGBT chairperson of my local Labour Party, which meant that I would also manage my local party's LGBT-related activities. This meant working with other LGBT Labour groups and other LGBT groups generally. It meant that during events where multiple groups attended, I would occasionally meet my old friends from groups that had banned me. How nice. Now they had to talk to me again. They even liked me, apparently. I had no need to dislike them. I knew that I didn't need to dislike them. Part of my Vulcan philosophy. I just enjoyed the company. I no longer needed to engage in my previous petty behaviour. I didn't want to control them in any way. I didn't try to get into arguments with anyone. You know, I was nice. There was no need. You know, they were nice people. They didn't mean me any harm in whatsoever. You know, I was nice to me. I was nice to Leah Rowe, which meant being nice to them, because it meant that they would probably be nice to me. It's a logical assumption that people will respond to me with a general level of reciprocity. Yes. I made a conscious effort to do the same. Just, you know, every day. I mean, come on, it's common sense. My local Labour Party sat with another Labour Party constituency one night. We were meeting at a large pub garden for an LGBT-related event. We were planning the next Pride March as part of the Labour Party. The LGBT chairperson of the neighbouring Labour constituency was also trans, but quite fuck ugly as well, and she made that everyone else's problem by expressing extremely transphobic views at all times. She ran a blog where she routinely advocated for abolishing the 2004 Gender Recognition Act, causing podcast interviews with multiple reactionary figures, mostly from conservative-aligned organisations, which made my highly astute eyebrows twitch uncontrollably. This is not uncommon. A lot of trans people can actually become resentful and start attacking other trans people. This one regularly referred to trans women as biological males, and she was known in my local community for holding such views. It's for this reason that a lot of trans people in that town, represented by that particular Labour Party, boycotted them. But I had to work alongside her in from my constituency party. I also knew that she was quite clever, and I sensed that she might possibly challenge me at some point because she knew I wasn't taking any shit. Like, you know, because I talked a lot. I got sacked. I got the ball rolling to get sacked from the party, reporting her for things that she'd said, like on a blog and elsewhere, making it as socially difficult as possible for her to remain in post. I kept quiet myself because I was a Vulcan now, apparently. I simply told all of my comrades about her, citing each and every one of her posts, and I spent several evenings reading the party constitution. I did enjoy her presence at that meeting, in the pub garden. She was quite charming in person. We were drinking that, obviously, that night, and she referred to herself as a walking happy meal, because the mosquitoes were out in full force. It may sound boring, but I was genuinely active in a social sense at this point. It was actually one of my most social years. I was extremely active in my local Labour Party. I befriended a large number of them, and none of them ever visited my house. Sometimes they picked me up in their cars, but I'd been making quite a name for myself. My Vulcan level control meant that I was reasonable at all times, and I smiled a lot, unlike Vulcans. I was generally quite talkative at meetings, and I'm just completely assertive at all times in a thoughtful, non-aggressive way. I sat in the house of a person who had some authority in my local Labour Party. He told me once that I seemed to possess a political knowledge far beyond my years, that I was clearly intelligent. This occurred while he was making me lunch, and we just talked more generally. There was even talk of making me a future parliamentary candidate. I gained their complete trust. The man himself was quite bossy at meetings. He was the sort of person who'd always have the most, intelligent opinion in the room, even when someone clearly proved him wrong. And he didn't like it when you upset his ego too much. He was usually charming, smiling at everyone, but he was completely authoritarian. He once argued so hard with a woman that it became a pissing match, and she stormed out of the room. The meeting ended because of it. Like, she actually quit the party. I had a right go at him, telling him, you're not the Labour Party. You're just a man, and that you should probably, treat people a little bit better. I enjoyed watching the gears in his mind start to jam when he couldn't scare me. He did try to have a go at me, but I remained calm, and I started to become polite. And he just knew it wasn't going to work, so he just immediately became polite. I told him he didn't deserve to be in the party, and I left. I just left the room that night, I specifically liked the Vulcans in Star Trek Enterprise because they seemed more real to me. These ones carried guns, and they used them when necessary. What? It's Star Trek, but it's pre-Federation, so it shows the Vulcans when they're at their most absolute best. I really can't say it any better than that. They were just cool. I was becoming much healthier and fitter. I lost several grams. I was thinking more clearly as well. I lost several kilograms in body mass. As I said, I lost 50 kilos like in a year. Hills started to feel like I was cycling on a flat road on a just calm summer's day. When I was riding on my bike, they were no challenge whatsoever. I didn't need all the space in my house anymore. All the clutter belonged to my ex-girlfriend. I'd got rid of all that. So, I'd later move into a small bungalow again in my hometown. I was much happier then. My mum took the proper piss out of it, the bungalow that I chose, because it was so small. She actually called it Noddy's house, from the TV, TV show Noddy. The contents of the bungalow were identical, obviously, but it cost a lot, because I just moved everything. I set it up exactly in the same, minimalist style. It cost a lot less, hundreds of pounds less a month, and it was centralised around a lobby area, connecting a bathroom, a kitchen, a living room, and one bedroom. A loft room was also present but it was a really big loft, and I had loads of storage space there. So, effectively, I had the same amount of storage space for my business as in the house, so I wasn't using most of the house. It wasn't practical to, put lots of the stock in different rooms. The outside garage was later converted into an additional bedroom with heating and insulation as well, plus electricity. I remember the day that I went to deal with all the paperwork. It was sometime during early 2018, and it snowed heavily. A rare thing where I live. The snow reached a thickness of about 30 centimetres on the ground. There was a really heavy snowstorm at that time. I remember walking I actually walked in it once. Full protective gear on to visit my parents. But I didn't give a shit. I went to the estate agents next day. It was still storming outside, and they told me I was insane for walking all the way there just to get my house keys, right? Well, I needed my house keys so I could move to my fucking house, to my new bungalow. Being back in my hometown again made me feel really happy as well. I just felt like I was at peace again. I didn't like my robot Christian neighbours, as I said in the previous chapter. And the town I lived in, it was basically fake. It wasn't actually rich, but the people in there acted like they were all rich. They were a bunch of fake snobs. The druggy family on my street was nice, although I did have to be vigilant to ensure that they did not steal my mail, which they did regularly. Noddy's house had a certain charm, and my neighbours also there were still robot Christians, but now they were my robot Christians. It was also a bungalow, as I said, not a house, and I would live there for the next 4 years. My people, my town. I was also now much closer to my parents' house, who would regularly come to visit me in my boring, tiny cartoon bungalow. I would go on to never see any of my neighbours, mostly. One of them even said that I never seemed to talk to them. One of them was a little bit senile as well. One of them, when I was walking around one day, he spotted me, like he walked past me, he made some really rude comments about my appearance for some reason, I don't know why. He just said rude things to me randomly all the time while smiling with his dog. And several other neighbors also hated him, so I didn't really pay much attention to it. There was a really nutty like right winger at the end of the street, but in the most hilarious way possible. Like, he always articulated everything in the most ignorant way. Like, all he knew was what was on the Daily Mail, like just whatever was in the Daily Mail that month. He seemed to like me though, so who really cares? Like, I didn't really care. They're all like just old people. I relapsed to smoking at this point because, quickly switching to vaping, I did not relapse by chance. For example, one was not offered to me while I was drunk. I just wanted to start again. I wanted to enjoy the buzz from ingesting nicotine into my brain. And I accepted addiction as a consequence. I'd calmly walked to the shop and bought a pack of cigarettes. Well, actually, no. I cycled there and I was drunk. But I woke up. It was late at night and I just smoked an entire pack. I felt free the next day because I no longer needed to worry about relapse. I simply enjoyed smoking again before switching to vaping because obviously, smoking's bad. I was outside smoking one day though in my new bungalow. I never smoked indoors because I didn't want to stink up the place, you know, because I had all my company stock and everything. It was nighttime and one of my neighbours, I had a young neighbour next door. She was about 20 or something, and she'd just moved in as well. She was having a party next door, and she was just completely pissed. Like, she was just completely shit-faced, and she was nice. Like, she hung over a fence and started talking to me. And at one point, like, she just got tempted and asked for a cigarette because I was being, like, really, really nice to her, like, just talking really gently. So she, like, got off the fence, went into her house, came out of the house, and, like, came to mine. And I gave her one, knowing that it would be the last moment of her own free will. Because you don't ask for a cigarette if you have them. So if you ask for one while you're drunk, that probably means that you're about to relapse. Nice lady. We spoke passionately as she told me about her life, having only just moved in. She worked at a local bookshop, and she enjoyed several of my cigarettes. She was very pretty, and I never spoke to her again. It was in Noddy's house where I watched #LibraBoots mentioned in one of the previous chapters, and it was during this period that absolutely no murders occurred whatsoever. Absolutely no murders whatsoever from July 2017 to July 2018. None at all. This whole period of my life, you know, it was mostly nice. Like, I felt like I had everything under control at all times. I experienced a general lack of stress, especially after moving back to my hometown. I was just at peace the whole time. You know, I had no stress. Everyone, it was just nice. Nothing bothered me. I was just relaxed and I just got on with everything. You know, I was free.